Always inspiring to think about the heroes of faith of old. Men such as Joshua. Today, what we're going to do is continue with our series on faith's Hall of Fame from Hebrews chapter 11. So I invite you to find Hebrews the 11th chapter. We began with an overview, and then from there we followed the outline provided by the writer himself. And we looked at creation, and then we spoke about Abel. This evening we want to say a few words about Enoch and Noah. Enoch and Noah. Two very loyal and committed men of God. Two men who walked with God. And in point of fact, they are the only two people, so far as we can tell, with whom the expression walking with God was applied and used. They walked with God. More than just talked with God, they walked with God. And we are going to discuss the significance of that statement in the course of this lesson. In Hebrews 11, verse 5, we read, "By faith Enoch was taken away, so that he did not see death, and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony." This is what people knew about him. "He had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." Now, I wanted to read verse 6 there in connection with verse number 5. Because verse 6 happens to be a commentary in part on verse number 5 with the theme of pleasing God. It takes faith in God to do that. Because without faith, it's just flat out impossible to please him. In other words, it's not going to happen. It is unachievable. Enoch had faith, and therefore what do you know? You know that he also pleased God. And a reward, benefit, or blessing is found in seeking God. Diligently seeking God. Verse number 6 there. So when you take all of this together, you would also discover that the idea is equally too that Enoch diligently sought God so as to please him and find him. Now, in verse 5, you find a quotation that takes you all the way back to the beginning, back to Enoch's intriguing story, if it can be called a story, because it just spans 7 verses in the book of Genesis, just 7 from birth to his departure. And yet, even with what few sentences you have there said about him, it was evidently enough to merit him a spot on this sacred roll and sacred roster, Faith's Hall of Fame, here in this sacred volume. So please let us go back to Genesis chapter 5, and let's learn here what was said of him. The first mention of him is in Genesis 5, 18, verse number 18, and we're going to cover the 7 verses here from there. We learn that his father's name was Jared. And the Bible here tells you, Genesis 5, 18, that Jared lived 162 years and begot Enoch. After he begot Enoch, Jared lived 800 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Jared were 962 years and he died. Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. After he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years, and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. And that's it. As far as the Genesis account is concerned, there are only three other places where Enoch is called out by name, in addition to Hebrews chapter 11 and here in Genesis. Two of those references happen to be in genealogical records, so we're not going to take a look at those. But he also happens to be found and referenced in the book of Jude, and we're going to explore that one here momentarily. But before leaving the Genesis account here, I want to make this observation. Did you pick up on how no less than two times, you read of Enoch walking with God? Once there in verse 22, and again in verse 24. That underscores that God was the centerpiece of his life and his world, year after year, decade after decade, and century after century for about three of them. He communed with the Almighty and fostered a close-knit, solid, and committed relationship with God, because that is the significance of saying that he walked with him. And while he lived an incredibly long time in comparison to others of this day before the worldwide flood, it was a mere 365 years. It wasn't all that long as far as his contemporaries were concerned. But of interest, his own son, Methuselah, was the oldest man on record at 969 years of age. But pay careful attention to this fact, that with all others here in this list of Genesis chapter 5, with all of the generations that are enumerated, you will read that they were born and then they died. They had a commencement and then a termination. Again and again, one by one, they live and die. And all of this death and dying, this living and expiring, comes to an abrupt halt. There is an interruption when you get here to Enoch. With Enoch, it was said that God took him. He did not see death. God took him because he loved him and wanted him to be with him in eternity. And he wanted to have compassion on him. This was not viewed, mind you, this was not viewed as a curse. It was a blessing. Because the implication, too, is that this was in no wise done in a corner, but that it was a matter of common knowledge. It was not speculation as to his whereabouts. It was not as though he went wandering off into the woods one day and a missing persons report was filed and a search party was sent out and the rescue team came back empty-handed and someone said, "Well, what do we make here of poor Enoch?" And another would answer, "Well, I don't quite know. Let's just go ahead and tell people that God took him, and maybe that will bring a small measure of comfort in their grieving process." No, people knew that God had taken him, even as years later, Elisha would know that God took Elijah. The only two people in the Bible to never see death were Enoch and Elijah. How's that for a short list for you? Now, Methuselah was 300 years old when God took his father, Enoch. And I have to believe that that made a deep impression on Methuselah and helped to shape him. Because for many years until he died, until Methuselah died at that ripe age of 969, he would be able to recall this event, this very dramatic occurrence. Methuselah will have a son, Lamech. And Lamech will have a boy whom he will name Noah, meaning rest or comfort, saying that this one will comfort us concerning our work and the toil of our hands because of the ground which the Lord has cursed. That's there in verse number 29. It is my conviction that you are looking at a righteous lineage right here. A righteous bloodline, if you will. For Lamech gave his son Noah a name that spoke well of him and foretold the hope and expectation that he would represent for humanity. Now, why would hope be so critical and important? You have to keep in mind that the moral compass of the world at that time had been pointing southward as early as Enoch's day. Hundreds of years, mind you, before the time of Noah. People were becoming grossly immoral. How do we know that the world was already becoming so corrupt even back in Enoch's day? I believe that you have the answer in the book of Jude. Jude alludes to the message of Enoch. Enoch was a preacher. It's embedded here in the message. There in Jude, which is just one chapter, but Jude verse number 14. Read this here with me. Jude verse 14. Now Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about these men also, saying, "Behold, the Lord comes with 10,000s of His saints, or sanctified ones, to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them, of all their ungodly deeds, which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against Him." Ungodly sinners were saying ungodly things about God back in Enoch's time. Now, what is all of this then a reference to with respect to that judgment that would be looming large? It certainly appears as though Enoch had a special insight into this coming day of doom for the impenitent. And yes, in part, that would manifest itself in the global, worldwide flood that occurred in the days of his great-grandson, Noah. The Lord came in judgment then, even as Enoch had been declaring. Let's go ahead now and speak of Noah. Hebrews 11, verse 7. Hebrews 11, verse 7. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. When we think of Noah, what emotions might come to mind? Or what feelings might we have? There could indeed be a, quote, flood of emotions. No pun intended. Mixed emotions. On the one hand, we would be saddened by the great loss of life that accompanied his time. And at the same time, we are impressed that one man could indeed stand against the many and not quit and not give up or capitulate. That he could bear up and hold on to his integrity, hold on to his still reinforced resolve to serve God amidst so many temptations and pressures to compromise. On the one hand, does that not seem almost superhuman and unreal? I believe that Noah truly lived out the words of that familiar song that we sing, "Though none go with me, I still will" what? "I still will follow." How alone he had to feel for oh so long. But Noah's story is one of overcoming. And therein, my friends, we can have courage. We can have great hope and comfort. Because you know what? we all do share Noah's DNA. In a sense, he's still with us. He is a part of us. Every man, woman, and child alive today can trace their ancestry back to Noah. And we have 7 billion people here in the world today. We all go back to Noah. And perhaps that's a reminder that even as Noah overcame, we have it in us as well to overcome just the same. But while this is a serious chapter within human history, a darker chapter perhaps, it is also a chapter with a silver lining. There is hope for God's people and for the future of the faithful. God is not unjust to forget our works and labor of love which we have manifested toward His name. Let's read here in Genesis chapter 6. Genesis chapter 6, let's start with verse number 1. Genesis 6, verse 1. Now it came to pass, when men began to multiply on the face of the earth, and daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives for themselves of all whom they chose. And the Lord said, My spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh, yet his days shall be 120 years. There were giants on the earth in those days, and also afterward, when the sons of God came in to the daughters of men, and they bore children to them. Those were the mighty men who were of old, men of renown. But look here at verse 5. Then the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. So the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping thing, and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. What a great disappointment mankind had become. The sons of God that we read about would be a reference to the righteous living in the earth, who beheld worldly girls, girls who did not have a love for the one true God in their hearts. And so the hearts of the righteous faltered and failed in their love toward God. I believe it's for this very reason that God would later warn His people, the Israelites, about the dangers of marrying those who had not given themselves to the Lord. And of course, we can make application even to the present that when our children, when our younger ones seek to find a mate, that they should aspire to try and find one of like precious faith. Find someone who is going to help you on that path of morality which leads upward where God resides. But in the midst of all of this here, where poor choices were being made by righteous people, we have Noah. Noah, who evidently made better decisions, for his wife was with him on this boat, as were their children and the sons' wives. Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. That's what you read there in verse number 8. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. Verse 9, this is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generations. Noah walked with God. There's that expression. Now he found grace. As to why this was, the answer is given there in verse number 9. Noah was a just man. This was not about some duck-duck-goose game. It wasn't some cosmic roll of the dice. Noah was a just man, and that's precisely why he found grace in the eyes of the Lord. He was a just man, not just a man. It was not like in the Tammy Wynette song, where men can get a bad rap. Sometimes it's hard to be a woman, she said, giving all your heart to just one man. You'll have bad times and he'll have good times doing things you don't understand. And if you love him, oh, be proud of him, because after all, he's just a man. No. With Noah, it was not that way. He wasn't just a man, as if that somehow excuses bad behavior. He was a just man. You see the difference? He had integrity in his generations. Not that he was sinlessly perfect, for the only one perfect that way would be the Lord Jesus Christ. But he was perfect in the sense of being a complete man, a whole man, in his love for the truth. And we will be complete in that way as well. And we see here, verse 9, that Noah walked with God, not away from God, as if to remove himself from his presence, much like Jonah would later attempt as he tried to slip away across the sea. He was not walking ahead of God so as to presume that he knew better than the Lord and that he could just direct his own steps. He's not going onward and failing to abide in the doctrine of God. He was not lagging behind God so as to be sluggish or disinterested or bored with God. He's walking with God. So what does that tell you? It tells you that there is this close-knit communal relationship, just like what exists there between two who would be walking together, say, like in a park, as husbands and wives might do, hand in hand. And I also think about what the prophet Amos would reveal. Amos chapter 3, verse 3. Can two walk together except they be agreed? The answer is no. So what does this tell you about Noah? Noah agreed with God and God's revelation. In chapter 7, verse 1, just one more point on this. We see that Noah was a righteous man. Then the Lord said to Noah, come into the ark, you and all your household, because I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation. He adhered to the right standard, the standard of God. And according to the Apostle Peter, in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 5, he was a preacher or a proclaimer of righteousness. Now this tells us that he knew what was right, and he practiced and lived what was right, for he was righteous. And he preached what was right. And let me ask you, is that not exactly what God asks of us today? That we know what's right, that we live what's right, and that we preach what's right? Absolutely, that is the case. It is vital for us to know Noah. Do you know Noah? For we're going to go through seasons in our life where we will feel much like him. Whether you're talking about the direction of this world or the direction of his world, you're going to find many, many parallels. Immorality has gone to seed. Immorality has made a very big push in this country of ours in recent days. I mean, you just stop and think about how the rainbow represented the promise of God. Correct? And yet, what has been done with the rainbow today? Quite frankly, it has been hijacked by the homosexual community. They're trying to make the rainbow theirs. So don't you see how we can face troublesome times as well? Society is becoming more apathetic. It reminds me of a point that I heard a preacher make, a gospel preacher. I was rather up in years. But he reminisced on how there was a day when you could talk to your neighbor across the fence row about politics and religion. And folks would say, well hold on here, hold on just a moment. I'm going to go ahead and get my Bible, and I'm going to show you why I think this way. But now the response is what? We just don't care. And did not the Lord himself talk about how the love of many would grow cold? And he compared all of that there when he was talking about the fall of that great city, Jerusalem, to the days of Noah. Back there in Noah's time, people just stopped caring. And they suffered the repercussions of that. Knowing Noah, knowing about Noah, can help us in these days. It can help us as we find ourselves in the vast minority, for God's people always shall. It can help us as we preach for a long, long time without visible results from those efforts. What was said here of this man? He condemned the world. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 7. Which means that he overcame. He was not swallowed up by worldliness. And we can overcome as well through the blood of the Lamb. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark. You see, at the root of all of this, there was a healthy respect and reverence for God Almighty. The wise man declares that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Proverbs 1, verse 7. Noah knew the will of God, for he feared and respected God. He moved with godly fear and prepared that ark. How do we stand with respect to that? There is indeed a grand day that's coming, the judgment day. It will be a sad day for many, but we want it to be a glad day for you. And it's only going to be a glad day if we obey the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ and faithfully submit to Him and live for Him and bring honor and glory to His name to the best of our ability in our sojourn here in this world. Are we ready for that judgment day? In 1 Peter chapter 3, 1 Peter chapter 3, here in verse number 21, as Peter here had talked about the days of Noah, and he said that the divine long-suffering waited in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is 8 souls, were saved through water. 1 Peter 3:21, there is also an antitype which now saves us, a like figure, baptism, not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. Why not be buried with Him in baptism so as to contact the saving benefits of His death, that blood that was shed, and then raised to walk in newness of life? Because He lives, we live. We can face tomorrow, and we can have great hope. Won't you respond to the gospel invitation, if it applies to your circumstances, while we stand now and sing, "Come Down Forward."